Stephen Tobolowsky has appeared in over 100 movies and over 200 TV shows in his acting career, from the Oscar and Emmy-worthy Mississippi Burning, Thelma & Louise, Deadwood, and Glee, to the comedy classic Groundhog Day, to current pop culture hits Silicon Valley and The Goldbergs. Well, in addition to being a legendary character actor, Tobolowsky is a storyteller, warm, funny, engaging. He does so in his podcast, The Tobolowsky Files, and also in his first book, The Dangerous Animals Club. Well, he now returns to the written word with his new book, My Adventures with God, an introspective story collection about love, catastrophe, and triumph that in turn describe his evolving relationship with the mystery that we call God. Again, the name of the book is My Adventures with God, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen Tobolowsky back to the roundtable. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us.
It is good to be here.
So, I think we had you on talking about your last book and your appearance at the Woodstock Writers Festival, and it's wonderful to have you back with a new book. So what brought you down this path of wanting to write this and ultimately to get spiritual?
Is it crude to say Simon and Schuster?
No, not at all. I think that's
a
true
thing. What happened was, after the first book, the first book came out, about 3 months after the first book came out, my editor got a hold of me and he said, "Stephen, what people are gravitating to in your stories is the humor in your stories, but also some of them seem to have this spiritual twist to them. Is it possible for you to write another book of true stories that's held together with the spiritual through line?" And so I said, "Well, sure, Ben, not a problem." So, of course, I had no idea what I was going to write. But you know, if they ask you to write a second book. So I started thinking about what would be my adventures with God. Of course, writing the book and getting to the other part of your question, what brought me to spirituality? I'm not sure anything brings anyone to spirituality. I think just in acting, men are always trying to be emotional. We're always trying to be emotional because we feel we're not emotional. And my belief as an actor is that we're all emotional 24/7. We are all spiritual 24/7. It's just we don't consistently identify the elements of our life that are guided by the invisible. And so in this book, I tried to corral the true stories of my life that really showed moments in my life from youth until now in which I was guided by something I can't understand and guided by something that I sensed and didn't necessarily feel. The handiwork of the hidden, of something more powerful than I, was at work in a lot of these stories.
If one of the rules is to write about things that you don't understand, I mean, at least for me, that would give me a lot of material.
Well, this is what I came up with. This is what I came up with as a kind of large tributary from the big river. Boy, I'm doing metaphors today. I need another cup of coffee. Yeah. The big river of writing this book led to a major tributary of, I think, that the key to almost any writing and almost any dramatic literature, be it a movie, a play, whatever, is revealing what is hidden. And you could take a look back and see, well, there's Oedipus Rex. Yeah, that's a good play. And what is hidden, of course, his murder of his father and marrying his mother. His crimes were hidden from him. You could take a look at the Iliad and how the men on earth don't, it is hidden from them, all the affairs of the gods above them that are throwing them into these various positions in battle. It's the same thing in Shakespeare. You have Hamlet's ghost, what is hidden. You have the dagger, which Macbeth sees. You have the magical world of the fairies in Midsummer Night's Dream, what is hidden. And Charles Dickens, you know, who's the great benefactor in Great Expectations. Every play seems to reveal what is hidden. Hey, I could keep Long Day's Journey into Night, the mother's drug addiction. It's, yeah. You know, Edmund's pneumonia. All of these things reveal what is hidden. And in my life, And I've had some interesting things happen to me from this book that were previously hidden, that were revealed to me. And I'm thinking now, this is going to be a good story. I'll give you an example since you read the book.
Yes.
I was on the book tour.
Yeah.
And on the book tour, I get a phone call from an old real estate agent who was talking. In the book, I speak about the man who brought me back to Judaism, probably more than anyone, Rabbi Schimmel, at the little congregation here. He is no longer with us for a while. He's passed on.
Right.
But this real estate agent said, "Stephen, I have the phone number of his only living daughter, his child. She heard about your book, had no idea her father was in the book, read the book and was amazed of all these stories of you and your father, and she says you need to call her." Again, what is hidden? So I get this phone number. I talk to Debbie, who I haven't spoken to in over a decade. And she says, "Stephen, you don't know the end of the story." And my little heart starts beating. And this story I'm telling you happened like maybe 2 weeks ago, recent.
Mm. Right.
And I said, "What is it?" She says, "In the last 2 years of his life," and again, we're talking about 15 years ago or so, "Rabbi Schimmel had dementia." And Debbie said that she and her husband, Ken, were the caretakers. They would put him in the back bedroom, and they put a baby monitor in there to where they could hear what was happening to make sure he was safe. She said, "Stephen, at night, I would hear him talking. So I turned up the baby monitor. Stephen, he was talking to God." And I go, "Really?" She says, "No, but he was talking to God about you."
Whoa. Yeah.
And so this, it's an example of things also, too. When you write true stories, you have a chance of having the truth come back and knock you in the head. And this is what I'm writing now, is about the stories that Debbie told me that her father was talking to God about me in the last days of his life.
And not that you need it, certainly, and I don't want to give that impression, but did he put in a good word for you?
He did.
Oh, that's great. Good.
But part of it was to remove the tsoras, which in Judaism, you know, is the trouble, the heartache, the pain, remove the trouble from my heart, and was part of his message to God that I was a good man and to please remove my troubles. And I told Debbie, "Next time you talk to him, tell him it worked."
Hmm.
And I'm thinking one of the big examples of, I was talking to someone else about the book, and I was mentioning an important aspect of faith, and this in spirituality, as you talked about at the beginning, is doubt. And a lot of the reasons why people have gripes against religion is they think that religion is based on certainty, of people saying, "This is the way it is. This is the way it has to be." That's the way high school was. The basis of religion is doubt. And almost every story in the Bible is a narrative of doubt. Truthfully, I mean, if you're talking about Abraham and Isaac, Abraham looking up, "Should I do this?" Moses at the Red Sea, he's going, what do I do now? It wasn't even Moses who crossed the Red Sea. It was someone else who decided he would take the first steps and part the Red Sea. Every story in the Bible is a compilation of human doubt. And that's all a prayer is. That's all Rabbi Schimmel in the final days of his life when he was whispering to God about me. That itself was a narrative of doubt, saying, "Stephen is in trouble, I believe. Can you please help him?" When we use the words "please" and "thank you," those are words that relate to doubt and to feeling that our doubt has momentarily been satisfied.
Stephen Tobolowsky is our guest. His new book is My Adventures with God. But he also, obviously, Rabbi Schimmel, was greatly, he made a great difference in your life.
Yes.
and helped you return to your faith. But in the in the same time, you had a great influence on his life to the point where he felt in whatever the state he was in at that point, to have a conversation with God about you.
Yes. And my take on this is, I believe at one point in the book, later in the book, I'm talking about that we're a contradiction. Being a human is a contradiction. And that the way we perceive the world is with our senses. But the one thing we can't see is ourselves. I mean, fundamentally, we cannot, which is why one of the first inventions mankind probably came up with was a mirror. And the second was probably philosophy, another mirror in which we were able to see ourselves. And I think what happens is, at least in my life, I know it's true, my life is a huge, beautiful bowl of darkness. And when I see somebody else reflecting something that I identify as part of me, it resonates. Right. And I think that's what happened with Rabbi Schimmel. I think he saw that the faith he had as a little boy, surviving Germany, coming to America, starting, becoming a rabbi, starting a synagogue, he saw his life reflected in the changes that happened in me, that he was able to teach and offer me. He saw his life reflected. And I think that's, I mean, you know, what's really, like, you take a look at this book. When you write true stories, you're creating a lot of little mirrors. I have gotten so many people, like, I have a story in the Genesis part of the book, like the stories are broken down into the five books of Moses.
Books of the Bible.
It was a conceit. You know, so I have Genesis, stories, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, all that kind of stuff. I thought it was a good organizational tool, but it turned out to be truer than I imagined. In the Genesis part of the book, I have a story of when I decided to walk home from the YMCA when I was a little boy, thinking, hey, it's only a 20-minute car drive. So as a little boy, I was in first grade at the time, so I was six. And a six-year-old boy walking it, 20 minutes by car, that should be 30 minutes for me. It was hours and hours and hours. And my mother and father thought I was dead. They called the police. They drained the pool at the YMCA. I had no money. I had no way to contact anyone to call home. And everyone in my family thought I was dead. And I finally got at nightfall. I got to where my elementary school was. I was still about a quarter or half a mile from home. And I went to the house of one of my classmates and was able to have them call my mother and father because I was crying too hard at the time. Hmm. And my father answered the phone when I said, "This is Stephen." And you know, he went, "What?" The sound of his voice, I will never forget. Because he thought it was the police saying they found my body. And mom and dad came and got me. And of course, I'm sure I was going to get a huge spanking for doing what I did anyway. But the number of emails I get from people now all over the world who happen to read that story in the book saying the same thing happened to them. And I read their letter, or their email, as you young folks call it. As I read their emails, their stories weren't at all like mine, except that they were children. They bit off more than they could chew. Their parents were in fear, and they don't know how they got home safely. In any number of combinations, it was that they were able to see their life reflected in my story.
There's still a mirror image.
Mirror.
But you go back to the Rabbi Schimmel story, and fate obviously plays a part here as well. You wouldn't have heard from that individual if you had not written that story and propped up that mirror for her to see her reflection and to understand that that was you that her father was talking about.
Right. And I don't want to, oh God, I'm just sorry I have to come up with yet another metaphor.
That's all right. I like your metaphor, Stephen. It's okay.
Okay. We all know the kind of scientific story of the monarch butterflies.
right.
is that the monarch butterflies spend their life in motion from a little breeding ground in Mexico to a place in Canada and then back again. And it takes roughly 18 months, 2 years to make this complete journey, this vast migration. The problem is the monarch doesn't live that long. There's no butterfly that is able to make the entire trip.
Right.
So the question scientists have been asking is, how the hell do the monarchs know every year to go to the same spot in Canada and back to the same trees in Mexico? Hmm. Who tells them? How do they know their journey? And the confused but elegant answer the scientists have is that maybe monarch is not a butterfly. Maybe the monarch is bigger than a singular butterfly. Maybe the monarch is an entire mind that is set with this ROM from the computer, read-only memory of this journey, is imprinted on them somehow. And even though the one butterfly cannot make the whole journey, the monarchs can continue to make that journey. And maybe people have that same element in them, that even though we don't really know what we're doing in this life, we are driven by, I guess, Rabbi Schimmel's big four. We're driven by the physical, the intellectual, the emotional, and the spiritual. He always used to say you need all four of those to survive as a human. We live in an age in which people think if you just go to the gym every day, you'll be healthy. But Rabbi Schimmel would say you need all four, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And maybe within us, within our DNA, within our hearts, souls, and minds, we have the cues, like the monarch butterfly, for all four of those, and we are able to make the journey, even though we don't know where we're going. It's kind of sad, but it may be true.
Well, it's a beautiful metaphor, first of all. Stephen Tobolowsky is an actor. He is also an author. His new book is My Adventures with God, published by Simon & Schuster. But the other thing, too, is that you spoke about why you wrote the book, which basically was an offer from a publisher. But so let me bring it back to work for a moment. Has this, for want of a better term, and I apologize for using this word, which I think is grossly overused, which is this journey, do you feel that this has helped you as an actor? Has this helped you in your profession, in your everyday life?
Yeah, but first of all, I'm not going to forgive you for using the word journey.
Yeah, I you shouldn't.
I'm not.
You should.
Well, you forgive me for metaphor. I forgive you for journey. I use journey too. We have to use journey.
Yeah.
Okay. I think writing the book, in a way, yes, and in a way, the events of the book certainly affected my acting. For example, in the book, I write the story of the only way I can understand it is the miracle I experienced when I broke my neck and had a fatal injury and survived. And for me, the miracle wasn't having survived this injury, but what happened while I was healing. And that event of the fatal injury and the healing changed my acting in that it made me realize the old, again, it gets to the Chinese story that the blessing is sometimes a curse and the curse is sometimes a blessing. And so in acting, your life is filled with curses, auditions that you desperately want and you either don't get or you fail to get the part, or being fired from a show, or having your part cut out and left on the cutting room floor. Your life is filled with curses. And the events in the book taught me that sometimes the curse is the blessing. And it's made my life much, much happier being an actor. And of course, there is a discipline that comes with writing anything that always helps with acting. Now, it has hurt me in a way. It has, and I didn't think of this, but I have to drop this one on you too. Writing the book has hurt me in a way as an actor.
How so?
In that being an actor, having an actor brain and a writer brain are two different things. as an actor, you kind of are very good at following rules and following orders and doing what writers tell you to do and directors tell you to do.
Right.
When you're a writer, you don't have any of that. You have suggestions from your editor, but you don't have to listen to them. You write when you want to write. You write what you want to write. You put it together the way you want to put it together. And so now when I work on anything, I can't get my writer brain to shut up. And so I'll be working on a project and I'll want to change the words. I'll go like, why are they using this word? This is the wrong word. And it's more difficult for me to learn lines. It's more difficult for me to be a good boy on the set. I have to go, this is wrong, guys. This is wrong. you start the sentence in the present tense and you move to the past tense. I just don't know what we're doing here, guys.
It seems as though perhaps the actor brain has to have a little conversation with the writer brain and remind the writer brain who brings in more money.
That meeting has to happen, and it has to happen right away. Right away.
Seems like that may solve the problem.
Yes.
So I assume with that, though, that you're as you indicated in telling the Rabbi Schimmel story, that you are writing, you're still looking, and there will be more stories like this to come.
Yeah, I still believe in the Tobolowsky Files podcast.
Yes.
And that as a method and as an individual writing form that people like these days. And again, as you so succinctly but perfectly put it, there ain't no money in that. but what there is in that is creativity, freedom, and outreach. When I put out a Tobolowsky Files podcast, thousands can hear it within the hour. And I don't have to wait for 3 years for a publisher to publish it. It's immediate. And then I can put my apologies out to Twitter equally immediately. I'm so sorry if I offended anyone. So what I did this last year is David Chen is my producer on the Tobolowsky Files podcast. We're doing it like Netflix now. We too are following the Netflix pattern of doing 12 or 13 shows season. I write them all, record them all, send them to David. He edits our conversations in with the story, and he puts them out on the internet. He drops them out. And then we'll do another season. We did one season this last year of 12 shows about my friend Jim McClure and about college and about summer stock. And this next season, I am anticipating what the stories right now, and it could change. That's the wonderful thing about writing is that it can change. And all you need to do is press that backspace button. And you could change whatever you want. But it is about the moments in my life where things change.
Yeah.
There are so many moments in your life where things don't change. But looking at the individual odd moments of where your whole life changed and you didn't even realize it at the time, and what it changed to, what you learned from it. And so right now it appears that that's the direction the stories are going.
The name of the book is My Adventures with God. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Stephen Tobolowsky, it's always a great thrill to have you on the program. I thank you very much for being with us, and have a beautiful holiday season, and thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you very much for having me on. I love it, always.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, My Adventures with God. Stephen Tobolowsky is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.